Reporting from my car, it's the news, according to me. I forgot to put my headphones on. I am literally sitting in my car this morning. I am sitting in my car. I am in Michigan, near the lake. Lake Michigan, that is. And I am sitting in my car with my laptop here. Hopefully the sound quality is okay. I'm guessing that the sound quality is probably better than it was when I was in the hotel. That's what I'm guessing. Most importantly, the question, of course, that everyone always asks is, what's in my cup? I do have a cup, and I do have something in it. And I have hot tea. I have a cup of tea with sugar and honey in it. I must say it's quite scrumptious. I don't know what scrumptious really means, but it's, I think it's a good thing. So I'm using that word right now. I am here in Michigan, where it's about 40 degrees here this morning. It's about an hour north of where I live, up near the lake. This is where I keep my boat. And I keep my boat here. Before it freezes, I need to be doing some work on it and getting things winterized, because otherwise it will be a disaster next spring. So I'm working on some things here. But there's another car pulling up right now that I believe might be coming in here to get rid of me. I think it's just somebody who works here. So I am... Hopefully this is sounding okay by the time it gets all done. But I have quite a bit of things to talk about this morning. One of which is an issue about a fellow by the name of Lindsey Graham. Now, I've talked about Lindsey Graham before, and I have made it quite clear, actually, that I do not trust Lindsey Graham. Lindsey was highly influenced by a senator from Arizona that shall not be named until he passed away. The issue with that whole influence that this person had on Lindsey, once this fellow passed away, he was actually a former presidential candidate, by the way. And when that fellow passed away, Lindsey changed quite noticeably. Lindsey is not just a rhino. Lindsey is a chameleon rhino. I don't know. He's in the past, he's had some thoughts of his own that I don't even know were his own. I can't really say that they were his own thoughts, but he has made some points in the news media that actually made some sense. But I don't believe that these points that he's made have been his own points. I think he's probably gotten this from somewhere else. One of the things that he said was when they were voting on the extended booster to the unemployment checks, I think they were adding $600 a week to people's unemployment checks. Now, keep in mind, this was just random, we're going to add to your unemployment thing. They were paying people more money to not work than they were making while they were working. And his concern was, if you're paying people not to work, they're not going to go back to work. Well, now we have a labor shortage because people aren't going back to work. During this whole time, there are people who will scam anything. And I'm not saying that everybody who took unemployment got that were scamming. And I'm not saying that everyone who takes unemployment is a burden to the system. I want to be very clear on this. Just first of all, as a disclaimer, I have never in my life drawn an unemployment check. There was one time I got laid off and I went to the local unemployment office. I was there for the purpose of applying for unemployment. The process, I was totally unaware of how the process worked. Now, I was probably, I think I may have been 19 or 20 years old, maybe 19 probably at the time. I can't recall how it went for sure, but I'm pretty sure I showed up, talked to the lady behind the counter there, and she basically told me I had to wait a week or two or whatever it was before I could apply, and then I wasn't going to get benefits for another week or something. It was this weird process. And doing that kind of opened up my eyes to how some people scam the system. Now, I'm not going to go into that today. It's not the purpose of today's show. But I did discover. Now, on my way back from the unemployment office, I went and talked to a few people on the way home. It was about a 30-minute drive. I ended up with a job on my way home. I ended up getting hired the next day. On my way home, I stopped in a couple places and asked them if they needed any help. They weren't advertising for help. I just stopped into some businesses that I knew of, that I knew some people who worked there, talked to them and asked the people that I knew. One of them went immediately to their boss, the owner of the company, actually, the small business, told them that I was there, and the boss called me back, and the next thing I knew, I was starting work on Monday morning. This was on a Thursday or Friday, I think it was. So I never went back to the unemployment office and never applied for unemployment because I got a job immediately. I wasn't going to sit around on unemployment. There's something about it that just grated every part of who I am. Another time when I was working at an airport, I was pumping gas. I was what they called a line tech at this airport. That's what they used to call it, at least at that airport. I would move airplanes around. I would park airplanes when they would come in, and I would I would fuel them. I would drive the little fuel truck around and put fuel in the trucks or in the airplanes. We also had gas pumps as well, so I'd pump fuel when they pull up to the gas pumps. I would clean the facility. I would clean the toilets. I would do all the stuff that people would do, clean the airplanes, service rentals, and that kind of thing. I would help out in the maintenance department when they needed somebody just to turn screws and do stuff back there. I would go back and help turn wrenches and clean up back there. And just a general overall doing stuff, keep track of fuel records, all that stuff. And a new owner came in to the airport and took over. In the process of the new owner taking over, I ended up kind of getting booted out. I worked for them for a short period of time. I was in the process of getting I had my pilot's license. I had my instrument rating, so I could fly through clouds. I was in the process of finishing up my commercial multi-engine rating, which I had just completed right soon after they had taken over. And then I was working on my instrument or my instructor license. It's called a CFI, Certified Flight Instructor License. I didn't have it yet, and I was working on it. I had purchased my own little airplane. I was kind of working on getting, I had about $4,000 in cash. and I had $4,000 on a credit card, and I went out and bought this little airplane for $8,000. It was run out, old airplane that was in good condition in terms of mechanically. It got around okay. So I was going to use that, maybe put, you know, 30 or 40 hours on it, get my instructor license. I was going to work on it just to kind of play around with it. I mean, you can put 100 hours on an airplane that's run out. It's not going to, you know, figured at least get me to the point where I could get my instructor license. I ended up getting that finished. It took me about 6 months, 8 months, something like that. Got my instructor license. Spent everything I had on this. I mean, I was on a tight budget with this whole thing. I was married. We had a little house. We didn't have any kids. Wife had a decent job. And so we were doing okay, but everything I was making was basically going towards flying. Ended up getting my instructor license, had this little airplane. I started teaching people how to fly. Well, I had my airplane in a hangar. And basically the airport themselves, they had already promised someone else to be a flight instructor for them. So they didn't, the airport, the fixed base operator, the FBO at this airport, one of the owners wanted to put me in as their head flight instructor because I was busy. I was getting customers. I was sending out flyers in the newspaper. I was pretty busy. I knew a little bit about marketing, enough about marketing that I was getting people in there to do discovery flights and learning how to fly. And I was building up pretty quickly building up a reputation of being a full-time flight instructor. And I was busy. The FBO had two students. I had, for every two students they had, I probably had 12. And I was very busy. One of the owners saw that and said, hey, we need this ambitious guy in here to, you know, let's get him under our belt and we can use him for helping out. The other owner was not, didn't want to do that because he felt like they would be undermining the other guy that they had promised to be the head of the flight department. Now, I would have worked for the other guy. I would have worked under him or done whatever they wanted to. Made him look good. I didn't care. I wanted to fly and I was going to do what I had to. But they kind of forced me to do it on my own. And this other fellow was all he was interested in was getting in with an airline. He had an application to United. He was trying to fill everything out. He was constantly going over it every day. He would go over that thing and he was trying to get his flight time up, get his hours up. He had spent $100,000, I think, on his aviation career at Purdue. And he was serious about the whole aviation thing, but he really thought he was going to end up being a United pilot. He never did. Never did get even an interview with an airline that I'm aware of. He doesn't work for an airline. He's a corporate pilot, which is fine. Nothing wrong with that. As far as I know, he's still a corporate pilot. However, there are huge advantages to being. You know, if he would have gotten into United when he was trying, when he was looking at it, you know, he never did apply. He never had the guts to apply because he was too afraid of the interview. It's like, because you pretty much get a one-time shot. At least back then, there was this perception of you got one shot at this, and if they don't take you, you will never get another interview. That was the way it used to be. And if you didn't have all your dots, your I's dotted and your T's crossed and your everything done perfectly on your, you know, and your logbook had better be exactly precise and not be off by a tenth, or they're going to throw you out the door. At least that was the perception they gave. Well, I kind of thought, you know, I'm not going to sit around and wait for somebody else to hire me. I'm going to start my own aviation. This is the way I've always been. Started my own flight school on the premises. Worked really hard. Ended up building it up to the point where I had 8 airplanes. I had 8 people working for me. I had, 3 or 4 of those were instructors. One of them was a mechanic, full-time mechanic. I started doing aerial advertising, towing banners, doing other things. And on the side, I was doing a lot of part-time pilot service work and charter work. I would fly for a charter company as well as do some other stuff. And then running the flight school as well. And I had a secretary. I called him a secretary back then, not an administrative assistant. Now they call them administrative assistants. But I had a secretary, because that's what we called them back then. So that's what I'm going to call it now. She did a great job. She was part time. And then I, like I said, I had eight airplanes and was working my way into the whole, you know, the business of doing things. Well, did that for several years. Took in a lot of money, spent a lot of money. You can take in $500,000 in a year, but if you spend, you know, we took in $500,000 this year. I spent $520,000, we got it done. And it's one of those things where it wasn't really making much money, but I was building a lot of flight time and getting a lot of good experience in business. Well, fast forward, you know, I ended up working for an airline, by the way. And I didn't even call the airline. They called me. That was my first experience with a regional airline, was one where I had people that I had taught how to fly and then actually had had working for me as flight instructors were calling me, because they were getting hired, and they were calling me and telling me that they were telling their bosses to hire me. Well, one of them took them up on that. And he ended up calling me. He said, "Hey, send me your resume. We got a interview class this weekend. Come on out for it if you'd like, if you want to." I said, "Oh, sure, I'll try. I'll give it a try." I didn't care. I already had a job. At that time, I was flying for a corporation, and I was happy with that job. I knew that wasn't going to be my final career in life, but I knew that it was a good place to work. I didn't care if I got the job at the airline or not, because I already had a job. So the stress on me was, I didn't have any stress at all, actually. And I was happy with where I was at. And if I got the job at the airline, that was great. If I didn't, I didn't care. So I was enjoying the experience, and I think that kind of showed, because they gave me a job. They offered me a job. They didn't offer anybody else in the entire group a job. I was the one they offered a job. And I worked there for many years. I worked there for about 7 or 8 years. 7 years, I guess. Good job. Good company at the time. It is not anymore. It is not the company it was. But that was 20 years ago. So, there's a few different people managing things now. It's just a very different place to be. And the industry itself has changed. Especially after 9/11. It changed a lot. That all said, I've said all of that to get back to this whole thing of the one thing that Lindsey Graham said that I've heard him say that made any sense was the whole unemployment issue. Because we are now today at a point where we have a labor shortage. We have all this money that has been thrown at everybody, unemployment checks, stimulus checks, all this stuff, randomly throwing at people who didn't necessarily need stimulus checks. There were people who, all the stimulus check stuff was based on what you made in 2018 and 2019. We were throwing money at people in 2020 who hadn't even filed 2019 tax returns yet. I got a stimulus check. And I don't have to tell you, I was making pretty good money in 2019, actually. And I hadn't filed my tax returns yet, and they sent me they were basing it on my 2018 income. Now, my 2018 income was actually pretty high, and I'm kind of shocked and surprised that I actually got a stimulus check. My wife and I both. Then I got one. It was kind of ridiculous, because we really didn't take a hit in 2020. My wife's job was solid. She was continuing to work, kind of busier than ever in some ways. My business was doing pretty well. And the interesting thing of it all was that I still got a stimulus check in 2020, and yet we were well into an income that did not deserve a stimulus check. Now, I wasn't going to return or forego getting a stimulus check. Don't get me wrong. That's not going to happen. Government's handing out money. I'm going to take it because I can spend it a lot better than they can. I guarantee you I can spend the money better than they can. I knew plenty of people who were hurting. I guarantee you the money that they gave me went to someone who needed it. Because that was the better, more efficient thing to do, in my opinion. Government hasn't, they were just throwing money at randomly at everybody. And at the time, if you go back to my show, I think I actually had a podcast at that time. I think I was actually saying, go ahead and give that money to someone else, that you take the money. Don't refuse it. Don't say, oh, I'm not going to take a government handout. No, I'll take the government handout and I'm going to do with it what I think needs to be done. Because I can tell a lot better than other people. I don't know if you can hear that train or not. It's going to hit me here. I'm parked on a railroad track because I thought it was going to be a quiet place to be. And I think the misnomer here is that people say, "Oh, I don't want a government handout. But if they're handing it out, I'm going to take it from them because that they get it out of their hands. Because all they're going to do is just squander it and spend it on stupid things." Well, it has come to the attention of some people, and I guess there hasn't been. I don't know if he's been confronted about this or not, or if anybody's said anything about it or not, or what has been said about it. I haven't really watched any reports. All I know, when I first heard this, I thought, oh, this is just a hearsay. And then I guess there was some admission or confession, or possibly, I guess Lindsay actually admitted to it, or there was recording of it or something. That on January 6th, Lindsay made a statement about the people who were supposedly raiding the Capitol. And I guess he said, told the guards, you have guns, we've hired you to protect this place, you know, shoot them all. Or what, something to that effect, shoot them, you know, use your guns and shoot them if you have to. This is a statement made by a coward, in my opinion. Now, I don't know what Lindsay, impression he had. I don't know what was going on there. I have no idea how and why he came up with why he made that statement. The only thing I can say is this sounds like the kind of statement that someone who's panicking and literally is afraid for their life, someone who is, I have no other word for it, cowardice. It's cowardice, in my opinion. So I don't know why he said it. I don't know what the circumstances were. I want to dig into it a little bit more, but I'm just going to say I'm not surprised that Lindsay would say that. And I would say it to his face. I would say this. I would say everything I've said today. I don't care if he hears it or not. I would say it to his face. I'm not trying to impress Lindsey Graham. I'm not going to kowtow to Lindsey Graham. I'm not going to. He's not my senator, by the way, in my state. I just believe the guy is a pompous rhino, who not only is a rhino but a chameleon. He will bend and shape and form to, and he'll squirm in his seat and act like he's all mad and shoot spitfire out of his mouth as if he's all upset with something to put on a show for a, you know, committee oversight thing that's on television so he can grandstand all of his little opinions and stuff, whatever he's doing. That's what I think of Lindsey Graham. I don't trust him. I appreciate the fact that he votes more conservatively and more, what's the word? A little bit more on the right side of issues, but not, I just don't think that much of him. I probably have more respect for Manchin in the Senate than I do for Lindsey Graham. And, you know, Manchin's basically a Democrat. he's a very moderate Democrat, I would say, who has some sense left in his head. So that's where we are today. I wanted to talk about that because not very many people are talking about this whole thing with Lindsey Graham. Having said that, let's get back to COVID, because that's where I'm going to go. You know that's where I'm going to go eventually, because it's at the forefront of a lot of people's minds. January 4th. I couldn't make it January 5th or 6th, especially the 6th, because January 6th, I'm surprised they didn't do it, actually. January 6th, in memory of the Capitol attacks, we're going to make this the January 6th mandate. 1 year later, we're going to, on the anniversary of the Capitol attacks, they're going to preserve that date, I think, for all of infamy. But they, 9/11 doesn't count for anything anymore. But that was, because those terrorists, they were just misled little people. They were, we're going to kind of smooth over that. January 6th attack was much far worse than 9/11. They are equating it to 9/11, folks. They've actually said that. This is as bad as 9/11. No, it wasn't. I think to the tune of about 3,000 people died on 9/11 and started many wars around the world. I don't think that 9/11 has any comparison. They tried to make it sound like it was the same, but just saying it does not always make it so. Like, unfortunately, that's the way they'd like to make it sound, but it's not the way it works. The COVID thing, here's where I see this going. Now, I knew that this would happen eventually. I'm surprised they've gotten away with it as long as they have. So here's what we have. We have a federal mandate for federal employees and contractors, subcontractors. That reaches pretty deep into most of the population. You must be vaccinated or you can't, there's no exceptions. They're really reluctant to do any kind of exemptions. And now, I want to just say all this stuff, and then I'm going to ask you some questions. Because the question that's in my mind is why, well, I'll ask the question at the end. I'll get done with this. We have a situation where we're forcing people who work for the federal government to be vaccinated. We have a situation where we're forcing contractors to the federal government to be vaccinated. Anyone who is a subcontractor to those people who work for the federal government need to be vaccinated. That reaches pretty deep. If you just do business with someone who does business with the government now, you have to be vaccinated. Now follow me on this. If you are an employer now. That's the federal mandate. Now there is an OSHA mandate, which is also far-reaching. Technically, under the Emergency Act, they can impose a mandate. OSHA can impose mandates for the safety of employees. How they are coming to that conclusion is a little bit sinister and nefarious. But here's what's happening. Originally, it was supposed to be earlier. Now it was pushed off till December. Now it's being pushed off till January 4th. And it may be pushed off again. But any employer with more than 100 people working, I think it's 100 or more employees, has to mandate that their employees have vaccinations. Okay, it's not going to stop there. And they're already talking about, the discussion, it's public knowledge, it's public record now. They're already looking at all employers, no matter how big the business is, have to be vaccinated. It's going to be an OSHA rule all the way down to one employee. Now, I'm not an employee. I am a sole proprietor business. And this gives me certain rights that people don't have if all they're doing is having an LLC, even an LLC, which everybody was pushing the LLCs. Well, even if you're a sole proprietor, you should get an LLC because it protects your liability. Not, it doesn't really. It just gives the lawyer another step they have to go through, another hoop they have to jump through to get to your personal stuff. Because if they can find you personally liable for something, then they will jump through that hoop and get you. They can take your home, take everything you have. If they can find you personally liable. If you are a sole operator, now if you have an employee, if you have an LLC and you have an employee, and the employee does something, you're protected in that situation. As a sole proprietor with no LLC, if I have liability insurance, that's all I need. Now, that costs more money, and without an LLC, it's much easier to come after me. They will come after me, even if I have an employee that does something. I'm paying someone to help me with work. Now, I don't have any employees, which is helpful. But I do work for a lot of other businesses. Now, I'm an independent contractor with a lot of other businesses. I have over 400 clients, and almost all of them are businesses. I don't know that I've ever done anything for an individual before. It's not a retail market that I work in. However, all the work I do is online. I've never met any of my clients. Well, I do have one client that has actually come to my office and worked with me on a project. I have a couple of other clients that I know that are long-time associates of mine that I've done work for as well. So that I can't say that I've never met any of them, but out of the 400 clients that I have, I've probably only actually known or met or had them come to my office three total. So how am I spreading the virus? I'm not, because I work online. You can't spread it. But I don't know if you know it or not, but you can't spread it through a Zoom call. I have... Now, I know where this is going. I can read the handwriting on the wall. I know where this is going. Eventually, they are going to tell me, these employers that are out there, they are going to say that in order to work for them, I have to be vaccinated in order to be a contractor with some of these people. I know that is going to happen. There's one client that I do some work for that has already said that. They've already made a policy that all of their workers, all of their contractors must be vaccinated. I will fall into that group, even though I have never met them. I live 100 miles away from them, and all I do is I do some work for them. But that doesn't matter. Everything I do for them is online, but that doesn't matter. I will have to be vaccinated in order to work for them. Why? Is this about science? Is this about protecting people? No, this is about forcing people to do something or you can't work. You can't earn a living. You can't work for anyone. So I am working on other things right now. I'm working on a couple of online courses, as well as I'm going to write some books. I've got two books that I'm working on right now. This gets into a position now where even selling books online, of course, now most of them, though, one of the biggest book sales online is Amazon, and they are probably going to require all of their vendors eventually to be vaccinated. Why? I don't know. How does it affect them? It doesn't affect them. Well, the government is probably going to put mandates on them that says that I need their contractors. And this is the other point that they're going to get to. Once they get to the businesses, the small businesses, they're going to get to them to go ahead and comply with this. And then, of course, now everybody once everybody's complied, or they as much as they can get them to comply, then they're going to go after, okay, now anybody that you do business with, or if you're a small business, now all of your customers have to be vaccinated. In fact, they've tried that. Don't think that that's not happening. They've already tried that in restaurants out in California. I think LA and I believe Chicago had tossed it around. I think New York now has this policy. If you go into a restaurant in New York, you have to be vaccinated. That's the deal. And I'll continue on with this. So this is where we're going with this whole thing. At some point, now recently, the CDC, head of the CDC, this lady who's the head of the CDC, was being grilled by a particular senator or congressman, I don't know who it was, and he was trying to get at the issue of the CDC has all the records they need to determine whether or not natural immunity is actually effective. He said, the data that has been shown in other studies is that natural immunity is up to at least 90% or more effective at least 6 months after having, and he was pretty well versed. He actually got everything right. He said the T cells, the B cells, and antibodies can be tested for. He said they have knowledge of all this stuff. And they can very easily, with the data that they have, they can make this determination. All she said was, we have determined that even if you've had COVID, you still should be you should be vaccinated. We've determined you should be vaccinated. Nothing about numbers, nothing about anything else, about what that's going to do to you. Just, you need to be vaccinated. If you're 5 years old, you need to be vaccinated, even though there's a much greater, like 27 times greater chance of you getting hurt by the vaccine than you will be by getting hurt by contracting COVID. Now, understand, there's a big difference there. Not every five-year-old is going to be contracting COVID. We're just talking about the people who would catch COVID. Maybe 30 million kids. The music is starting to come in, and I'm going to move it. Oh, no, I'm going to tell them to stop that. I still have a lot to say. 30 million kids. Let's say 30 million kids get COVID. Okay. In the process of all that, 30 million kids get COVID. Less than 0.1% of them will have serious reactions, potentially death. Now, the problem with this is that kids just don't get COVID. I mean, it's just out of 30 million kids, you know, maybe 10,000 of them will get COVID. Even the Delta variant. Here's what's crazy in all this. Let's say you have a group of kids and 10% of them get COVID. Out of those 10%, 0.1% will have hospitalization issues. One of them might die. If you took those same 10,000 kids, I should say, whatever the percentage is, you take that whole group of kids that you took from the sample, maybe it was, whatever, it was 100,000, what did I say, 100,000 kids, and you gave them all the vaccine. 27% of them, 27%, 27,000 of them will have adverse reactions to the vaccine, 85% of which will need hospitalization. And yet, the doctors, you can shove that information right in front of them. This is what Joe Rogan did to Sanjay Gupta. He put this information right in front of his face and he refused to understand it. His ability to comprehend it was so obviously skewed by his narrative that he had to push. You gotta be vaccinated. And in the process of doing this, he couldn't listen to what Joe was actually reading from the paper, from the reports and the data, because it doesn't go with the narrative, and he had to push it a different direction. He's like, no, you're wrong, Sanjay. This is what you're saying. You're not listening to what I'm saying here. That's the kind of blind insanity and hysteria we have over this thing. We are harming more kids. This comes back to what Joe said mistakenly, and yet that's what he always bumbles through stuff and ends up saying things that are true, that the cure is worse than the disease. This is not a cure. When you're giving kids vaccines that are potentially and obviously, or according to the data, are damaging them more than the disease is, what are we doing? What is the logic behind this? It makes absolutely no sense. And yet, we are nuts about this whole thing. I don't get it. I just don't get it. Except to say this. It is about control. Getting back to the whole interview with the CDC director. They don't care about the science. This is not about protecting people. They are just hell-bent, by hook or by crook, to get everybody on the planet, every single individual, vaccinated. Except, you know, those who are coming across the border illegally. We don't care about that so much, apparently. As Ron Johnson said, and I will continue to say, there is something sinister going on here. And it is absolutely out of control. I'm faced with a situation in this job that I currently have, one employer that I'm actually employed with. It's a side business to what I do in my real business. They're going to have to force it to the point where I'm going to have to lose my job. Now, I'm doing the job because I like doing it and because I want to be there. I'm not doing it for the money. But it's very sad for me to have to turn away from this company. I'm not going to leave. I'm not going to quit. I'm not going to walk off the job. They will have to terminate me. And my hope is that at some point, they might suspend me and keep me, like on a furlough type thing where I don't lose my, because seniority, it's places union. So I have seniority. Hopefully I don't lose that seniority. At some point, they're going to call me and want me back. I'm at an age where I'm not going to last that much longer with this company, but I'm close to retirement. Let's just say that. Close enough. And my other business does so well, and there's so much work to be done that I almost can't justify continuing to do the job that I'm doing here, because it just takes too much time. So that's where I'm at with this whole thing. Ask yourself why there is such a hysterical push. No matter what you believe about the vaccine, Look, folks, you can still get COVID. Pacircleback Pasaki proved that. Not only can you get COVID, you can spread COVID and not even know it because you don't have any symptoms. You're an asymptomatic super spreader. I don't care. That's not the science. You're the science denier if you don't get vaccinated. It's baloney. Have a great day, everybody. God bless. Thanks for watching. Thanks for subscribing, sharing, and commenting. God bless.